On a Friday, you're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. So the number of known cases of the coronavirus in our country has surged past 14,000 by Johns Hopkins estimates. And here in Wisconsin, the governor says two people have died, the first to be reported in the state. So the number of confirmed cases continues to grow to 155 in 21 counties. That's as of yesterday. There are important resources to help your loved ones navigate the pandemic. What answers are you seeking about COVID-19? Do you think there might be help in Wisconsin and you don't know where to turn? Bring your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Will Cushman is an associate editor at WisconText. That's a digital news and information service of WPR and PBS Wisconsin. And he's part of this team that's reporting on the pandemic, compiling an extensive information bank, especially for Wisconsinites. Will, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So yesterday, Governor Evers confirmed that two people have died. What can you tell us about these cases?
Right. We don't know a whole lot so far. All we know from the press release is that there are two men, one in his 50s in Fond du Lac County and the other in his 90s in Ozaukee County.
And do we know anything further except for basically their ages and where they are?
No, according to that's all the information we've gotten so far from the press release. I'm not sure if we'll get more information. I know that they're getting away from providing more extensive details in general with these cases. So that might be most of the information that we get.
To protect privacy, how does the rest of the state look as far as COVID-19 cases? What are you seeing in the numbers?
We're really seeing them grow now pretty substantially over the last few days. There's been a greater number of new cases reported every day for the last several days. And that was, as we just heard a few minutes ago in the newscast, about 55 new confirmed cases by the state DHS yesterday. That didn't include a few other cases reported by counties. But we know now that we are definitely up over 150, somewhere around 155 or 158. And that's just confirmed cases. And we know that the cases are spreading throughout the state as well. The virus is now reported in at least 21 counties, and that's from Rock County in the south all the way up to Bayfield County.
You've been looking into how hospitals are maximizing capacity. What is it like inside hospitals right now?
Right. I've talked to several doctors around the state who are in the midst of preparing for a likely surge in patients, and they are doing everything they can to maximize their capacity right now. That includes canceling elective procedures. They want to open up as many hospital beds as they can because there's really a limited supply of hospital beds, especially right now, because in Wisconsin and throughout much of the nation, been dealing with a pretty heavy flu season, and bed capacity is already pretty high, or the bed occupancy is pretty high.
Due to flu, and so COVID-19 is certainly going to make that more of a complex situation. What other measures are being put into place by healthcare facilities, by clinics to address the pandemic?
There's all sorts of stuff. They're trying as hard as they can to procure personal protective equipment. That's been extremely challenging. There are issues with supply chains, and there's not a huge stockpile of that equipment available, even from the federal government. Hospitals are also creating protocols to keep COVID-19 patients as separate as they can from the rest of their patients. Hospitals, while they're dealing with this crisis, also have to care for all of the other patients who come in on a regular basis and want to do everything they can to keep them from contracting this disease while they're in the hospital. That's partly because we know that people with pre-existing medical conditions are at a greater risk of serious complications from COVID-19.
We're talking with Will Cushman, an associate editor at WisconText. That's a digital news and information service of WPR and PBS Wisconsin. Are you concerned more cases will be confirmed in the state? Is the state government doing enough to stop the spread or help stop the spread? Should the state offer drive-through testing services? Join in with your thoughts, your questions about where to get services, 800-642-1234. 1-800-324-4234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Will, it seems there's been a lot of discussion about this flattening the curve, that our community isolation will help keep this manageable level of cases for medical providers to respond to. Can you explain how that curve works and where it's at?
Sure. Yeah. So in the case of a highly contagious respiratory disease like COVID-19, if there's really nothing done to control its spread, either through social distancing or ramping up our personal hygiene efforts, the number of new cases in any given area where cases are on the rise will rise pretty swiftly, often exponentially. So that's like more cases, an ever-increasing number of cases like per day as the outbreak reaches a peak. And so the whole flattening the curve discussion really revolves around measures that we can take as citizens to slow the spread of the disease and thereby buy some time for our hospital systems to manage the flow, the surge of COVID-19 patients. So that includes things like social distancing and proper hygiene.
Do we have any indication where this curve is going, where we'll hit the max and it will start, descending, those numbers will start depleting?
Yeah, right now in Wisconsin, we're still early in the outbreak, and that curve is looking quite exponential. As we've had over the last several days, a higher number of newly confirmed cases than the previous day. So that curve right now in Wisconsin is looking quite exponential. I should add that part of that is probably just due to increased testing around the state. There's still a lot of issues with testing in the state, but there are more tests being conducted, and so there's more infections being confirmed. But it is still worrying, I think, to public health officials and doctors to see that curve so steep right now. So the hope is that in the coming days, with these social distancing efforts, with people staying at home as much as possible, that curve can flatten at least a little bit and hopefully stay below where our hospital capacity is.
Governor Evers had declared a public state of emergency this month due to the rising number. What have we seen out of the governor and his efforts to contain this?
Yeah, the public health emergency declaration preceded all sorts of stuff, like the closure of schools and schools going now to online instruction, the closure of universities, as well as these increasingly restrictive bans on public gatherings. We know that started at public gathering. Well, first, the recommendation was for a ban on public gatherings of 250 or more people. That went to 50 people, and now it's a ban on public gatherings or any gatherings of 10 or more people. So all of that is kind of directly related to this public health emergency declaration. The declaration also allows state agencies to kind of bypass typical purchasing requirements. So it allows DHS to basically try to procure as many supplies and medications as possible, as quickly as possible. But we know that is quite a challenge given the state of the supply chains and also the federal stockpiles.
We have Will Cushman with us. He's our partner at WisconText, a digital news and information service that's working across public media teams to bring us the latest news on COVID-19 and how Wisconsinites are affected. Have you been following the cases since the beginning? Are you surprised by how many cases have been reported in Wisconsin? Do you think the situation would turn into what it's become now? Share your thoughts, share your resources. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with Will Cushman in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the latest reporting from our partners at WisConText about COVID-19. We learned this week Wisconsin was running critically low on needed medical equipment to combat the spread of the virus. Lawmakers sent a letter to federal health officials requesting respirators and surgical masks and face shields, surgical gowns, coveralls, gloves, you name it. It is one of the stories our reporters have been following about the national stockpile, along with so many other developments. Have you stocked up on hand sanitizer or other protective gear such as medical masks? Are you a healthcare provider? Are you dealing with a shortage in supplies? What are you in need of? Be part of this. Share your questions. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Will Cushman, an associate editor at WisConText, and he stays with us to slow down the news cycle and help us understand what's been going on here in Wisconsin. Will, let's take a moment to look at the federal level. Members of President Trump's economic team will meet on Capitol Hill today to negotiate with Senate lawmakers, and they're really racing to draft this $1 trillion plus economic package. What do you see out of the federal response right now?
Right. I haven't been following the federal response as closely as the response in Wisconsin, but I do know that, as you said, Congress is swiftly working towards some sort of aid package aimed particularly at the nation's workers and businesses that have been affected by these shutdowns. My understanding is that the aid package is likely or possibly to include direct payments to American citizens. There's still discussions about what those payments might be, but I think the expectation is that they are going to be somewhere around $1,000 per resident, depending on income level, et cetera.
Bruce called from Broadhead, couldn't stay with us, and wants to know why there is so much hype about this when there's only a little over 100 people that had died from COVID-19 in the U.S. when more people were hospitalized and died from influenza just last year. What would you say there?
I would caution Bruce against considering this as hype. I think if we look at the situations in Europe, particularly in places like northern Italy and central Spain, we see that what just a few weeks ago was a few hundred cases and a couple dozen deaths is now really exploded into tens of thousands of cases of COVID-19. And in Italy, now more than 3,000 deaths. Their death caseload now exceeds China's. It's rapidly rising in Spain as well as in Iran and other countries. So I think the idea here is that if we can get out as much as we can ahead of this and practice social distancing as much as possible, we can flatten that curve and reduce the strain on hospitals and also hopefully save some lives.
Let's bring in a call now. Zach is joining us from Wapaka this morning. Hi, Zach. I understand you're a rural physician.
That's correct. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
So what we need most is for people to take this seriously and stay home. So this is not going to be over early. If we do a great job of containing this thing, it's going to be a long haul. So find a plan to make this the new normal. And get comfortable with this idea, because I think this is going to be a stretch for us.
Zach, what are you seeing in your own practice as a physician where you provide health care? What is it like right now?
I would say lots of folks have awareness, and so they're canceling appointments, and we are also proactively canceling non-essential appointments. But there's still a handful of folks who are showing up for appointments really not being serious about what's going on, or really not having an awareness of what their risk is. A lot of these folks that are coming in like this are typically, I'm going to generalize, baby boomers and older that just aren't paying attention to the news that has enough information for them to be prepared.
Zach, what are you telling these patients then? Are you telling them to reschedule or not even reschedule at this point?
Well, when patients are showing up at your door, our risk in our actual clinic is pretty low currently because we don't have a lot of activity in our community, but it's going to change, and it's going to change day to day, perhaps minute to minute. So For those folks, I'm having a conversation one-on-one, you know, very authentically, telling them, you know, what their risks are and what their plan should entail going forward. A lot of folks are travelers. Some older folks that are in my practice are split between their significant other being someplace else, either Arizona or Florida. And people are talking, they want plans to, you know, potentially fly or meet them around Easter. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is going to be months. And for the people that are over 60, you know, we're going to surge, and their risk is going to be higher for everyone to contract this. But the risk of contracting coronavirus for someone over 60 is going to remain for as long as this disease is active in our communities. So for people over the age of 60, you know, really make plans to hunker down for the next probably 4 or 5 months.
Zach, how may your job change in the coming months as a rural physician?
As a rural physician, we have a wide array of skills. We deliver babies, we do inpatient, we do outpatient, we run a hospital. So, you know, my colleagues and myself are all planning to flex where we're needed. And where we're going to be needed is going to be where our highest skill set is needed, probably in the hospital. So as far as, you know, the routine, that's already, you know, non-existent as far as, you know, what was the normal routine of practice. We have multiple layers of surge plans so that we can flex and probably do shift work in the hospital as things progress.
Well, Zach, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that situation. We will certainly stay tuned. And we'll, you know, Zach is saying there that this could be months that we should be prepared for a long stretch.
Yeah, and believe me, I mean, I'm talking to you from home right now, wrapping up my first week of working from home and basically isolating myself in my home. I totally understand the mental challenge, the mental gravity of that prospect, and that can be a lot to think about and quite disorienting. But the alternative of a hospital system completely overwhelmed quite quickly by patients is, I think, scarier to think about.
And earlier this week, Governor Evers said school closures go on indefinitely, and there are mandatory closings of restaurants and bars. Do you anticipate here there will be more restrictions on life as we know it?
That is a really, really good question. And yeah, it's not clear yet in Wisconsin what more restrictions there might be coming in the next days and weeks. I know that there have been more restrictions imposed in some places, like in California. I believe overnight there is now a statewide shelter in place order.
Let's turn to face masks here for a moment. What do we know about the effectiveness of medical face masks?
So face masks, my understanding from talking to healthcare professionals and public health professionals is that they're really best for people who are sick and who are symptomatic and need to go to the doctor or something to try to stop the spread of whatever they have, whether it's COVID-19 or another respiratory illness. The face masks are also extremely important for healthcare workers, keep them safe while they're testing and treating patients. So we really are recommending, public health officials are recommending that healthy people do not wear masks in order to conserve the much, much, much needed masks for hospital and healthcare workers.
Well, let's take a little bit closer look at testing for COVID-19 in Wisconsin. How has testing evolved?
So testing has evolved from a situation where all tests were sent to the CDC in Atlanta, and that was quite a slow process. Testing has now expanded considerably in the state, but it's still the demand greatly exceeds supply of tests. So a lot of hospitals are sending tests to public health labs for testing. That includes the State Hygiene Lab in Madison and the Milwaukee Health Department's lab in Milwaukee. But then also some private providers have developed their own tests to speed up testing among their own patients. That includes the Mayo Clinic and I believe some health systems in the Milwaukee area. I've spoken to doctors all over, including a doctor at Bellin Hospital in Green Bay. And he said that their hospital is still sending tests to the state lab, but it's just taking too long to get results back, and that they're likely to move toward developing their own test. And he said that he expects most health systems to develop their own tests in the coming weeks.
Will, have you heard of any indication that any areas are moving toward drive-through testing?
Yeah, we know that there are drive-through testing clinics in the La Crosse area affiliated with the Mayo Clinic-affiliated healthcare sites there. And I believe that there are also drive-through testing locations in the Milwaukee area. I'm not sure what they're affiliated with. And I've heard reports in some other communities, but I'm not sure I can confirm them right now.
We're talking with Will Cushman, an associate editor at WisconTex. That's a digital news and information service of WPR and PBS Wisconsin. And he is part of a team that's reporting on the latest news on COVID-19. Will, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome, Kate. Thank you.
Coming up, we talk with the superintendent from Chippewa Falls about how we can address the mental health needs of our students and how to keep them well during a time of crisis. Stay with us. There's more conversation after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a heads up on our programming here. Join us tonight for a special broadcast of Here and Now. It's from our partners at PBS Wisconsin for the latest on COVID-19. Host Frederica Freiberg will talk with Governor Evers. We'll also hear about the work by medical teams throughout Wisconsin from state epidemiologist Dr. Ryan Westergaard. So that is tonight at 7:30 right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This week, we've been checking in with public school superintendents around the state to learn more about their response to COVID-19. And it's really important to keep sharing information right now, different ideas that districts are putting into practice. How is your child handling being home from school? Do your kids miss their friends and teachers or even the homework? How is your school communicating with you? Has a teacher reached out? We're at 800-642-1234. Heidi Eliopoulos is superintendent of schools for the Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District. Superintendent Eliopoulos, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Why, thank you. I'm happy to be here this morning.
So with the governor's declaration this week that schools are closed indefinitely, how did you respond to that directive?
Well, we had brought together a planning team at different stages throughout this. Our first work was on canceling things like field trips and out-of-district travel and after-school activities. And then that planning team's work evolved to planning for the short-term closure when we believed would be back in session April 6th. And we started putting together resources and activities for families, starting to put plans in place for short-term provision of student needs. And then when the closure situation evolved to indefinite, our planning team got back together and we've been working on how to ensure that teaching and learning continues throughout a long-term closure, as well as planning for how to meet other non-academic needs like breakfast and lunch and school-based mental health services and other social and emotional needs of students as well.
And we're going to get to those social and emotional needs here in a moment, but what about, Heidi, the rites of passage? What about high school prom and graduation?
Mm-hmm. Right now, with the closure being indefinite, we are planning for a what if of a long-term closure and planning out how can we still ensure exactly what you said, those rites of passage at the end of the year. And I think the biggest thing we want, especially our seniors, to know is don't worry, we're going to work on this and we're gonna find a way to still ensure that our students are able to graduate. And there's alternatives that we're exploring right now as we speak, so we can start to provide some of those answers. I can only imagine, especially for our seniors, that that's probably one of the biggest things on their mind right now.
What about arrangements for food, providing food for students who depend on those meals, those breakfasts and lunch each day? How is that ramping up?
Yes. So in Chippewa Falls, what we've done is we have 9 schools in our system. So we have arranged for families to pick up today's lunch and tomorrow's breakfast at any of our 9 locations between 11 and 1. It's a grab and go. So they're welcome to hop out of their car and come grab the bags, or we'll deliver them right to the car window as well. Right now, the plan is that will be closed during spring break week. But other than that, every single Monday through Friday from 11 to 1, anyone 18 and under is eligible to participate. There are no income qualifications. And they do not have to be a student here. So parochial students, homeschooled, open enrolled, anyone 18 and under can come and participate in that. The first day we had over 500 participants. Yesterday was just our second day of this service, and we served 817 lunches and 811 breakfasts yesterday alone.
And these grab-and-go lunches and breakfasts, are these shelf-stable items, non-perishable, or are there fresh items as well? What is in the bags?
Yes, it's a combination. So there's milk and some sort of sandwich and fruit. It's a little bit different every single day. So there are things that could be eaten in the next day or two, but there's also things that could be held on to long term. We're also working with Feed My People to, during the normal conditions, we participate in a weekend's kids meals where Feed My People helps us send home bags of food with students on the weekends. And we also have food pantries in several of our schools. So we've identified a staff member to work with Feed My People to develop plans to still make sure that families have access to food during the closure, because school is normally the place where they get those items.
How are you getting learning materials out, or what will that process be like for students?
Yeah, that's so important. When we were first planning on just a short-term closure, we had sent home resources and activities for families, understanding this is going to be a longer-term solution that we're working on. We're actually building teaching and learning that will take place online, some synchronous and some asynchronous, so some things where people will come together at the same time, and some things that are independent. The primary delivery method will be online, because for 80 to 90% of our students, they will be able to access that online. The next step in our planning is we are working on securing additional hotspots for those families who need a hotspot in order for them to access online. And then the third tier of our delivery is we're also developing systems and processes, so we will print out paper copies of that same online learning materials and mail them to families, because there are areas of our school district geographically where there is no fiber, so internet is not an option, but also the cell signal isn't strong enough to support a hotspot. So we need a third option of paper for those families as well. So we're putting those systems and processes in place to ensure that all of our families will have access to the learning activities. Our school district has one-to-one technology resources for all students in grades 3 through 12, so students were able to take home those devices. And then additionally, we created a checkout model for kindergarten through second grade for a family that maybe doesn't have a device on their own, or a device that the student can have primary access to throughout the day. They were able to check out a device for the closure period.
Superintendent, what is the timeline for those hotspots, and how will families know that those hotspots are ready to go and that they may suddenly have better internet access or access that they didn't know about?
Yeah, we're currently, we've identified a vendor to work with, and the biggest question will be how fast can they get them to us. So we've gotten the quote, we've figured out how much money it'll cost, we've secured the resources to get them, and now we're in the process of ordering and getting them. We keep in regular contact with our families. The primary source of contact we've used is electronic messaging, because nearly every family in our district is able to get electronic messaging. However, especially knowing that the audience we're targeting with the hotspots may not have reliable internet access, we also have a phone dialer option where we can create a pre-recorded message and send it out either to the entire district parent group or to specific targeted families as well. We also did a questionnaire last weekend in which we asked families to tell us what their needs and access and availability are. We had 1,600 households participate, which is a huge level of participation. So we have had already contact from parents saying we do not have reliable internet access or we do not have a device that our child can use on a consistent basis.
We're talking with Heidi Eliopoulos. She's superintendent of schools for the Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District. She's telling us how her district is responding to the COVID-19 outbreak and how she is responding to the needs of families. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to tell a superintendent? What resources have you found to help your students succeed at home during this time of crisis? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You have been a champion for students' mental health, making sure that both educational and mental health needs are taken care of. What do we know about how students process something like this that is drastically changing their family life?
Absolutely. Well, we've turned their routines, their daily routines that they've come to expect, those predictable routines, we've turned them upside down. On top of that, for a child walking through a store, to see an empty toilet paper shelf is one thing. To see shelves where there's no food, empty food shelves, is something completely different. That feeling of having to stay home and having to stay inside, that is going to shake students of any age, younger and older. So our role as adults is to focus on how we can contribute to their calm, not to their chaos. And there's both ways that we can continue to support the school-based mental health services that we provide as a district and just in general as adults. We in Chippewa Falls have as many as 100 students every single month who participate in school-based mental health services. That's something that since they're not able to come into the school, we had to work on how we could still ensure that. So we have partnered with a local church, Central Lutheran Church, to help with students whose parents aren't able to take them to their mental health appointments. They're going to help us financially support transportation for those students. We contract with Chippewa Yellow Bus and have the ability to repurpose their transportation vehicles and their staff to provide transportation for students to their mental health services. We've also expanded the use of telehealth. So using either telephone or a web-based communication system, students are able to participate in their mental health, their counseling appointments using right from their home, using telephone or computer. So we thought it was really important now more than ever that we keep the continuity of those appointments for students who are also already participating, but also we're continuing to communicate to families that if there are families who newly feel like they need these supports, how to start those supports up.
Well, let's pause right there with Superintendent for Schools in Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District. Heidi Eliopoulos is with us. Her district has focused in the past on improving mental health resources for students. What resources have you learned about to help your student cope in these difficult times? What questions do you have for the superintendent? What do you want her to know? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in a moment with Superintendent Eliopoulos right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about how Wisconsin public schools are dealing with a pandemic, and we've talked with several superintendents in recent days. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, President Trump signed emergency legislation that eases rules for meals that schools provide to students and providing certain leave benefits related to schools. So what is the greatest challenge for your student right now? Are you a teacher? How are you coping? What is home life like for you and your students? We're at 800-642-1234. Heidi Eliopoulos is superintendent of schools for the Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District, and she stays with us. Let's bring in Chris now, joining us from Columbus. Hi, Chris. What is your situation like?
Well, I'm a nurse, and so when I'm not at work, I'm trying to maintain sanity in the house. But I will want to comment that staying inside is actually not beneficial all the time. You know, oftentimes the air quality outside is better than the air quality inside. It's good to get outside. My plan is that during the homeschooling period, we're going to take outside breaks, go shoot some hoops in between, you know, classroom periods, keeping the normal school day routine, and then incorporating some outside learning, and that is beneficial for their physical health and mental health, because it's been shown that, you know, getting out into nature is actually a calming influence. And young kids need to move. If you try to keep them inside, it's going to tear your house up.
I know. Yeah, we went on a hike as soon as I got home from work yesterday. Chris, you know, how are you doing that balancing act between nursing and the needs in your home?
Well, come home and throw my clothes in the wash and wash them on hot and take a shower and then go about my day as dad.
May I ask where you nurse and what the conditions are like right now?
I am a travel nurse, so I go where I'm needed. And about a month ago, it was very busy with a lot of pneumonias. Right now, it seems to be just normal with the occasional. I mean, we do have cases that we need to monitor closer, but we were short on PPE, personal protective equipment, already because of the increased pneumonia and flu season. So it's touchy, but we are all calm and managing it with proper precautions.
What did they say? Stay calm and nurse on?
That's it.
Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for calling in. Superintendent Eliopoulos, you know, Chris is saying get outside with those kids.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're recommending as well. On our website, with the learning activities that we had recommended as part of our short-term plan, we identified numbers of minutes recommended for the various subjects, with 60 minutes recommended for physical education, art, and music. And so similarly, we're saying go outside and interact and play and run around with the children in your home.
Well, Mike from Appleton called in, couldn't stay with us, but wanted to give a shout out to the Appleton School District where his kids go to school, and they made sure kids had enough books and user-friendly lesson plans to follow. How are you staying in contact with your fellow superintendents and also the Department of Public Instruction?
Yes, we get regular communication from the Department of Public Instruction, and additionally, collaborating with other local superintendents, fortunately for us, isn't new to this situation. So formally and informally, we touch base and share ideas and do problem solving together, because we know we're better together and we can come up with stronger solutions if we collaborate around them. For example, the superintendents in my conference, the Big Rivers Conference, will have a conference call later on today, but less formally, we've used email and text messages and phone calls to connect with each other regionally. And we've been sharing resources. If one of us has what we feel is a solid instructional resource or a solid communication or solid plan on how to manage certain operations, we're sharing those back and forth with each other so we can learn from each other.
Well, let's bring in another call. Jesse is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Jesse.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a second grader and a 4K-er in the Ricetown School District, and I just wanted to say thank you to the superintendents, to the principals, to the teachers across the state. you know, we keep saying business as usual, but this is an unusual situation. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone's just trying to navigate it together. I'm still working, but I'm very fortunate to have a babysitter who's running curriculum and things with my students, or with my students, with my kiddos. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we also acknowledge that we have the resources and the abilities to do that for our children, and a lot of parents don't. And so that teacher might have been the only person, you know, that they saw throughout the week that was positive for them. So for these schools to take on that burden and to be doing such an amazing job, I think we really need to acknowledge.
Yeah. Superintendent, you know, making sure equity across your district is certainly a challenge, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So that was the foundation of our conversation when we started the conversation and the planning at all, is we put the word equity right at the top of our meeting agenda and had a shared definition that equity was about giving each student what they need at that moment to be successful. So that led us to online learning as the only option isn't going to work for us. We needed to have, while we could cast that net wide and it would meet the needs of 80 to 90%, that's not acceptable to stop there. We need to ensure that all the variety of different situations that exist in our district, that we have a solution for each of those. And that's been part of the challenge, but also part of the sense of accomplishment of the work that we're doing, is we're taking on something pretty big and pretty complicated, but we're making excellent progress. So what we've appreciated so much locally is the understanding from our families that this is a big beast to take on, to ensure that every child has what they need in the manner that they need it. And to have quality supports in place is going to take some time. And we've gotten so much support with both our short-term planning and our long-term planning.
Well, let's bring in Artis now in Desmond with thoughts on this. Artis, hi.
Hi, I'm a nurse case manager that works at home anyway. Last week, they sent home like a paper for, I have two daughters, one in high school, one in elementary school. I'm in the Kettle Moraine district. The elementary school sent home a paper folder last week, and then during what would be the spring break, they're coordinating online stuff for the elementary kids. My daughter, older daughter, works remotely a lot anyway. And yeah, I've kind of stocked up on some minor art supplies. Yeah, I know the outdoor piece, and they put that on the lesson plan. But hopefully, I'm a little nervous because my daughter is kind of, you know, she's a little bit hyper, and we'll see how it goes. Plus, she's going to be going between me and her father, so that'll be interesting.
Artis, thank you for sharing your situation. And I think it speaks to, Superintendent, that every situation is unique.
It sure is. Every single one is different. And we've learned so much as people have reached out to us and have shared their situation. And we've been able to allocate people and resources to try to figure out each and every one of those unique situations. Additionally, is we have students with unique learning needs, and we have to ensure that students who do get additional special education services still have equal access to the teaching and learning, as well as the accommodations that they need. And we're still holding our annual IEP meetings that we would hold just as if we were in session. We're just holding them virtually in a lot of cases.
In the last few seconds, what challenge are you working on today?
Today we are working on really finalizing our long-term online and from-home teaching and learning plans, and really going through and making sure that we have all the training we need for our staff to be able to create and deliver instruction, and our families to be able to access and participate in instruction.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
Heidi Eliopoulos is Superintendent of Schools for the Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District. Just ahead, we talk with people around the state about the many different ways neighbors are helping each other during this pandemic. Are you helping out in your community? What do you want to spread the word about? Share it right now, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us for The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.